It's the Puppet Parent Podcast. In this episode, we'll talk about 4 months of living with another family, ghosts doing stand-up, the mystery spot, gym class trauma, and a horrible college professor that I'm still angry about. It's all coming up next on the Puppet Parent Podcast. Okay, we're fully recording now, so I can get this. There it is. I threw it on the pen. You ready? 3, 2, 1. Okay, this is the Puppet Parent Podcast diss track edition, where I diss former college professors that may or may not be dead, because who knows? Who knows? Why are you working at a college? I don't know. If you're working in the film industry and then suddenly you're like pushing papers at college, maybe something happened.
People
in a lot of cases,
confused.
Things happened.
Wait. Hi, everyone.
Hi.
My name is Z, and this is Chad, and we are the Puppet Parent Podcast.
Yes.
And Chad is
all this pent-up stuff from all the things that happened today that we're going to talk about.
Oh, boy. Okay.
We're going to talk about picking apples. Yeah.
You're pent up about picking apples.
Yeah. Got them.
Yeah,
got them in a
you
bag.
You picked them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
We're going to talk about... We're gonna talk about some heavy stuff, some really heavy stuff that I can't even say out loud without crying a little bit.
Oh no!
I know. but first, let's throw it down about the college professors that we didn't like 20 years ago that are probably dead now. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yes, this is all you, honey.
That's right.
I'm not saying anything negative about anybody.
Yeah, it's like zip the lips. I will just lead and just regurgitate. No. At the time when we were going through college, right? It's not like today where you could submit your papers online or, you know, just Zoom your classes. Man, I would have loved to do that. You actually physically had to go to a lecture hall and sit through a lecture of somebody lecturing from some notes that they've had for like 15 years about multimedia, communications, film, whatever. There were some good classes. There were some good professors. There were some not good ones. And the ones that were bad were really bad. Really bad. And there's this...
And we went to the same college.
We did. SUNY Fredonia.
Mm-hmm.
Hail Fredonia.
No, I loved my time at Fredonia. I just want to say that. And I had so many great professors.
Yeah. No, we were just getting on about this one professor.
All I said was his
one
name.
One person.
All I said was his name, and it unleashed...
That's right.
...the beast.
I've been holding it in for decades now. Decades. What up, Swanee? I'm sure... Well, all right. So... Everybody, even if it was your kindergarten teacher or fourth grade teacher or like somebody with a PhD who is technically teaching you something in college, everybody has one teacher you just don't get along with, no matter what. You know, I think that that's like a universal truth. You know, like I'm a teacher, you have taught people, right? There's like one student in your class where you're just like, yeah, we're just not, it is not happening. We're not on the peace train together. You're just on different planets. Something's going on in your world or in my world or something, and there's just this divide, and it's always going to be that way, and that's fine, you know. But what I dislike more than having my time wasted, actually, that's just it. I really hate having my time wasted. But what's worse is you're paying someone to waste your time. That's the worst. So that's how I felt like every time that I had to take a course from this person whose name I have not mentioned yet in this podcast. That's right, for legal reasons, because he's gonna get us. No, he's probably dead by now.
Stop saying that.
What? Probably no. Every once in a while you hear, because it's been 20 years since we were in college, right? Oh yeah, such and such professor died, right? Like I had a communications professor who we learned like 2 years ago passed away. You know, and she'd been battling cancer for a while. My first thought was like, this is the person that made sure that I didn't, that lowered my GPA by 0.01% so that I got a summa cum laude instead of a magna cum laude. Thank you very much. Rest in peace. That is your legacy in my mind, is you didn't let me, like, she was unfair to me in a class.
I was happy that I graduated. I just want to say that. I had no loud anythings.
Uh-huh.
I just got to walk across the stage.
Yeah.
And that was a big deal. 4 years.
Yes. Good job. I tried really hard. Really hard. Like, I was getting straight A's, and my first time ever getting straight A's, and my parents were like, we knew it. You were smart the whole time in high school, and we just didn't know what to say to you to make it right so that you could apply yourself or something. And it was like, it was a big deal when I got a B. Mm-hmm. And this lady gave me a C. It was one of two only Cs, and I felt like I didn't deserve it because it was taking a class on director, and I had already taken a class on director in a different track, so I already knew everything. So I didn't do the work because I was like, I already know this stuff. Look at this project that I did. Boom. She's like, yeah, but you have to actually write out the work on the assignments that I gave. And I was like, yeah, but you and I both know that it's already done. You know, I already did this. We disagreed. She gave me a C. Maybe I deserve that C. Who knows? But now she's dead. Dead and buried in the ground. I don't know. Is that... I don't feel like it's in poor taste. Why is it in poor taste? People die all the time. All the time.
Yeah, I don't know. I just would never talk about somebody like that.
I think if she was still around, we could have had like a laugh about it.
Okay, yes,
I agree. That's the kind of thing. Like, we weren't like, I hate you, laser eyes.
Not like this other teacher.
No, not like the who actually gave us laser eyes. No, it was more just like, come on. I was like, come on. And she's like, no. And I was like, fine, I'll take my summa cum laude instead of magna cum laude. Even sounds way cooler. See, Swanee knows what it's talking about. Swanee says, I had a professor in New Testament. Is that a class?
Maybe it was a university.
This is true.
Or a place.
Love speaking about himself. So class is usually about what he did and how great he was. That is exactly... So let me tell you. Sorry. All right. I started to sidetrack this into Chad rants about podcast.
It's okay.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Is that all right? Can I talk about one more thing?
It sounds like you have a lot to share. Chad's having
so much to share because
big feelings right now, everybody. Big feelings.
Thank you. Because it was such a big deal for our circle of friends was to the professors that we really didn't like was to talk about it. You know, we didn't have social media in 1999 to 2003 at all. So we would just like talk about it and riff on it. And this professor, so different professor, worse professor, a multimedia professor who technically had a PhD but stopped learning the instant he got it, was so terrible that we were like, the only reason this person has a job is because he has what's called tenure. Can you enlighten us, Z? What is tenure?
Well, I used to think... Because I'm like the first person in my family to go to college for a four-year degree. I used to think that it meant that you were at the college for 10 years and that it meant that then you get to be there for as long as you want. But it really is not tenure. It's tenure, which is not 10 years. But it's like you've achieved a certain level of academic prowess, and then they will say, you are so good that we want to grant you the ability to stay on, and like we're basically folding you into the company that is this university or this school, and you don't have to be worried about being let go because of job cuts or anything that you did that, you know, maybe we didn't agree with, because we know that you're a really great teacher.
Yeah. So it is a terrible system. Awful. Terrible.
Well.
Crazy bad. Because if you have a system where once you achieve something, you no longer have to try. And everyone else, like all young teachers, will never get what you had. It's kind of like retirement benefits in the U.S. right now. It's a lot like working minimum wage jobs, where once you get up to 40 hours a week, companies in the United States are legally have to give you benefits. So everyone who works minimum wage jobs in the United States works 39 hours because they will never give you that 40 hours because then they have to pay more to give you benefits. It's the same thing with the tenure system. When I was in college was we had these great young new professors who were coming in who were telling us, like, yeah, all these terrible old professors will be there forever and they've stopped learning. They don't understand multimedia today, which was the early 2000s. And basically they were like part-timers. And then when we left college, those people were getting out because the college was even cheaper, saying, you know, we're not even going to hire new professors. We're just going to get something called adjunct professors, which is where they hire like a recent grad, somebody with even less experience, to come in even more part-time and just teach like a couple courses instead of like an entire semester worth of stuff. So, and we're shelling out the equivalent of, what, $10,000 every single year?
I don't remember, but it might have been something like that.
Which is cheap by today's standards. But back then, $5,000 a semester was crazy pants. Now it's like...
But it was a state school, so that was still affordable.
Yes.
In the grand scheme of things.
Yeah. So paying $5,000 a semester to have the most boring person in the world lecture us for 45 minutes...
Three times a week.
Mm-hmm. For one class, maybe more... someone who has tenure, who doesn't need to achieve or do anything, who is just put up with by his fellow staff members, and everyone acknowledges, yes, he doesn't, you won't learn anything. Yes, he just plays movies because that's what he likes and he doesn't have to teach. Yes, he openly brags about how easy his courses are and how everybody loves him for that. And then, like, there's nothing anyone can do. And when you call him out on it, and we did, finally, my friend Greg.
Oh, I remember.
Our friend Greg.
It was notorious, this story.
Who speaks his mind, finally called him out on it in the middle of class. Because we were doing silly things, like making fun of him, snickering, like, hee hee hee.
And I should just say that Chad and I were never in class, actually, together.
Yes.
That I had the same teacher, but a different year. And that we had some of the same struggles, and there were also some similar situations that happened in our class. But your class was went down in history as being the class that
called him out
more than any other. Ours did as well, but
yeah. People were transferring into his classes from other majors just because it was so easy, which is fine. That's fine, but we were paying money to learn. You know, like specifically about subjects that he was supposed to teach and getting nothing out of it.
Yes, and we were taking these courses from him more towards the time that we were going to be graduating. It was a new major. People were unsure as to what kind of job we were going to be getting. And because it was a new major, all of these courses were new courses. And as you continue to get on, like sophomore, junior year, you started to get this feeling of, do the professors actually know what they're doing? I actually don't think that some of them do. In fact, I don't think that we're going to be prepared at all to enter this field of doing, what are we doing? Wait, what is this major? Like, what's even happening here? You know, it started to feel very out of control, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yes, and you guys were the first class through this newfangled profession,
media arts,
transformed into multimedia and then new media and then got folded into communications, which is like film and TV and stuff like that.
Graphic design too, probably.
Yeah. So
but it was a nice idea at the time. It just never.
So one day after months, it was like a couple years into putting his terrible quotes up on quote boards and having a laugh and getting really frustrated and failing quizzes because pointing out to him, hey, actually your quiz is wrong. Like what you wrote was wrong. And he said, yes. He would say this yes to many times. He'd say, you're not supposed to find the right answer. You're supposed to find the correct answer, which gives him a pass to be completely wrong in any of his tests or quiz because, like, we're not aiming for the truth or the correctness. Yeah.
See, I've repressed all of this.
I mean, there was even, like, a question that was, like, pointedly racist against Native Americans, and we were like, yo, I'm not circling that. Do not circle D because it's racist, and that's the one he wanted for the... Anyway, so finally, my friend Greg had enough and told him off during class. And it was like a long rant. He'd be like, you know, everything, all of our grievances were aired. Like, we're paying money to listen to you. You don't even understand this topic. We know we want to learn. And all you're doing is showing us movies because you're lazy. And, like, it stops you from having to come up with material for these 45-minute lectures, which should be, like, learning. We're students. And he... left his lecture post, the podium, came up into the audience because we're in a giant 300-person lecture hall, came up right next to us and started screaming at us. And this is usually the most laid-back, hippie stoner voice, ponytail, kind of a, hey, cool, groovy, whatever guy in the history of the world. And he screamed at us about how awesome he was and how he had a PH freaking D, and like, how dare we say anything else, and started to list off his achievements. The next class with him was a presentation about himself to us, showing us his PhD dissertation and basically reading it up on like the big screen. And it was crazy. And no one like that should be teaching, because they're not actually teaching, but they have tenure, so there's nothing that can be done. Anyway, rant over. Sorry, that's 15 of your minutes of your life. You'll never get back. Just know that the frustration still burns inside. It's like, God, like little flames are just popping out of my eyes every time this person, the memory comes up. And when you sat down today, you said something that reminded me of a quote of his.
Oh, no.
Which he would say often. I'm going to mess up, but he would be like, you know, that's kind of, he'd be like, before we do this, let's kick this dead horse one last time, or something like that.
Yeah.
He also talked about
all of us being green all the time. Do you remember that?
Somebody who just put everybody down.
I don't remember a lot about him.
I don't wish death on anybody, but if you're out there listening to this, and I know you're not because you don't know anything about anything, so you're definitely not listening to a podcast about nothing, ranting about somebody in the past. Sometimes it needs to get exercised in a public forum, like in Greece.
That is what
like
you're
in
doing.
Athens. You need to go to a public forum and be like, I have beef with this person who wronged me 20 years ago.
Okay. You did it.
Okay.
You have other, you needed to talk about apple picking now?
Yes. Let's talk about apple picking. Okay.
We had a nice time.
You said you turned off the printer.
I did. I paused it.
Oh, no, you paused it.
I paused it.
I can hear it working. Maybe the printer's just there to break the ice, right? It's like, hey, like snacks on the
everybody
subway.
Okay, hey, everybody. Here. Fruit snacks for a dollar. Help my basketball team.
Oh, there is no basketball team, kid. We know.
There was never a basketball team. No, I'm sorry about the back. The printer in the back. I think
I just wonder if this is gonna print something.
I don't know what it's doing.
One time in college, a friend of ours who was really scared of ghosts, like actually scared, who believed in ghosts. And if you're out there believing in ghosts, you were like, ooh, leaning in, right? But these friends of mine who lived in the dorm with him, same dorm hall, they were really tight. They decided to mess with him. And so they figured out that his printer was shared on the network, which nobody understood what that meant back in 1999. So they would start to leave him spooky messages from a ghost in the middle of the night. So he would wake up to the sound of his printer. And he'd be like, what? And it was like a spooky message from a ghost. And he was like 1,000% believing in it.
That's funny.
And they would use red ink.
Oh,
and
no.
He was like, how is it red?
See, because we've been together so long, and I've never heard that story.
Because you heard of Jimmy Igo, right?
Of course. The
local
Igo
legend.
Hall was always haunted by Jimmy Igo.
Right, the student who had died on campus.
There always has to be one student in one residence hall that's haunted because of somebody or something. So that's the one at Fredonia, Jimmy Igo.
Yeah, so it would be like, eventually they went a little too overboard with like printing out like little clip art graphics of spooky things along with their ghost messages. So he got wise. But it was fun while it lasted. That's the kind of harmless prank that I feel like is okay. You know, it's not a prank that's going to get, like, you covered in water and people are, like, pointing, you know, fingers at you. It's like they're saying, like, come on, man, ghosts.
Yeah, what if the ghost starts telling really bad jokes?
That would be like, if you're gonna haunt me, what would you do? Would you snicker at puns?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
If there's like a good pun, you just hear like a disembodied voice.
No. I would try to shove things that would like be punny into your face somehow, you know?
So what it would be like what? Like a banana just starts moving on the table and I'm just like, I don't get it, ghost. You gotta give me some Pictionary or
I don't know. I can't think of like anything specific, but I know that like I would try to make it funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fun. If there was like a fun ghost.
Yeah, I would be the funny ghost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What if a ghost was trying to be funny and people were like, no, it's just not working. Sorry. Like, ghost, you're trying to too hard to make this happen. I'm sorry.
New
this...
family. You got to go to a new house, different house.
Yeah, it's like stand
everybody,
up.
There's somebody out there that appreciates your humor. Maybe this is just not a good fit for you.
Yeah, so maybe there's like a ghost comedy club, but for like hauntings. You know,
yeah.
Like it's like
you
stand
can make
up a
it
lot.
Funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Some stand-up is about like exercising. It's like therapy,
mm-hmm.
right? Some stand-up is about like sharing, like The Moth. It's about like selling your book. And sometimes stand-up is about like making everyone laugh.
I have dreams of doing stand-up.
Yeah?
I do.
Wow.
But it's scary.
Yes.
It's scary. But I think I have like ongoing notes that I've been making for over a year now of like things I would talk about in my stand-up special. You know, the one I'm going to get on HBO.
So wait. We got the Z Briggs Museum. We got the Z Briggs comedy special.
Man, don't make me sound too full of myself or anything.
No,
so the museum was an idea when I was living in Connecticut. In this house that had a quarter mile long driveway and was only heated by firewood, and it was rustic. It was a rustic life. And it felt to me, especially in this northeastern corridor of Connecticut, that anything could be a museum because there were lots of tiny little museums all over the place. Yes, I'm including a puppetry museum that I volunteered at and helped at.
Yeah.
And so then I started to get in my head like, oh, anything could be a museum. You could have a museum of anything. Huh. What if I turned this house into a museum and it's the museum of me and you just come to tour my house? And so then I would give tours like on specific days when our museum is open of our house. And then the gift shop would be like a yard sale of like my stuff that I didn't want anymore. And it just seemed like such a brilliant idea. And I was starting a nonprofit. I get one of those brown signs that looks very official.
Oh, yes.
You know, the museum of Z Briggs is this way. And
then you could have like you pointing on it like, hey.
I know. Like mystery spot or something.
Yes.
If you guys don't know what a mystery spot is, Google that.
What's the mystery spot?
Well, sometimes like in different parts of the country, I saw one in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. They have these things called mystery spots, which there's like usually multiple billboards leading up to it. Like you're 10 miles away from the mystery spot and only 5 miles. Get ready to pull off at the next exit for the mystery spot. And it's just covered in question marks. What's the mystery spot? I don't know. Do you know? Well, how much time do we have till we have to get there? I think we have time. Do we have time? And finally, one year, I convinced my parents, we have to go to the mystery spot. We pass it every year. We never go. Please, please, please. And so I think
how old were you?
Probably 10 or 11 is my guess. So because we had passed it multiple years in a row at that point, and it was like killing me that I didn't have any authority in the car to be able to like, we are pulling over. I can't handle it. I have been so mysteried out for years now. I need to know. And it's before the internet. So we finally pull off to the mystery spot, and it's a shack, basically. It's like a house. And some teenager is like collecting the money, and there's another teenager inside. So then you go inside the house.
Ooh.
The house is magic. Things occur there that shouldn't happen. Like the ball rolls up.
Ooh.
Up the ramp. And the chair looks like it's diagonal, but when you sit in it, it feels like you're like totally level and like things like that. And but the thing I remember the most is the ball rolling up.
Did it roll up?
Yeah, it rolls up. But the whole thing is it's an optical illusion. Yeah. See, it's like a crooked house. But it's cool, and it's like a roadside America, ladies and gentlemen. And I think my parents, and I know my mother is watching this, so that's not awkward at all. But I'm pretty sure, and Mom, you can correct me, that you guys were like, that was lame. And I was like, that was awesome! That was awesome! Mystery spot! We got to do something I wanted to do! Because only child in the back seat. All we ever did was go to iron ore museums. So we finally got to do something that was really, really fun and silly. And that's what I really like is fun and silly. So that has not changed. And if we pass a mystery spot, we are pulling over.
I'm giving
them money. I'm buying all the magnets. But anyway, so this is why I was inspired. But to make my own museum.
Nowadays, if you have teenagers working at your hokey sideshow, like Roadside America optical illusion attraction, I think you've made it. You know, like that's an official. It's not just like a lookout place, you know, where you pull over and just like take a picture.
It's not a scenic view.
No, you have to pay somebody money and somebody's being paid to be there.
No,
that's
and they
official.
Were so annoyed by the entire situation too. It was like perfect. It was perfect. I wish I could bottle it because it's just so Americana.
Yeah. The adults are like, ugh, and the kids are like,
no. Yeah. All the kids are like, oh my goodness, can you believe it? And all the adults are like, oh my goodness, can you believe we just paid like $25 to see somebody roll a ball up a ramp? And the teenagers who are giving the presentation are using that lilt in their voice because they've done the, and here you'll find the da 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 da. And you know, there's that certain timbre that happens when you've repeated the same lines over and over on a tour. Yes. And I only know this because when we would go on these cave tours and mine tours, these people have given that tour hundreds of thousands of times.
Yes.
And so it's always the same. And here we have the Princess Rock standing in the column formation, dripping with calcium deposits. And you can tell that this has been happening for thousands of years based on the coloring in the rock.
Z, you could get a job doing that. You're so good at it.
But there's that da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's... Oh. It's this like weird singy song pattern that happened.
They should just sing. We had a great when Christina and I were in Thailand. We went to this one museum that was like as we got further and further on the tour, we were like, wait a second. Like we went in going like, oh wow, there's this really famous guy and this is his house and he's helped to preserve Thai culture because he had this house preserved and it's like a museum and it's like an institution and it's the only thing that was preserved from this period in Thailand history and everybody knows that, right? And then as we got further and further in the tour, we're like, wait a minute, this guy exploited the Thai people for like all this money and so, like exported their goods but then stayed super rich and had all these servants and we're like, okay, but
awkward.
Yeah, it was like but
complicated.
As we got further and further in the tour, we were like, we love the tour guide, she's amazing, because she was like, she'd given the tour a million times,
yes,
but she was so positive and matter of fact about everything. It didn't have that just like meh, 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 meh. She was like, no, here at the Jim Thompson Museum and Cultural History House, you will learn that Jim Thompson was a wonderful man. And he did this. He did this that was normally the Thai people did this. Jim Thompson did this instead. As you will notice over here, and we're like, wow, she's professional. She's really good. And I want to hear her explain everything. Like anything in the world. I was like, just please keep talking. Because she didn't seem like bored or anything. It was like, I don't know if it's like that in like all Asia or all Thailand, or maybe, you know, it was just like this one specific place, but I felt like there are better ways to give tours, people, you know, like maybe she went to tour school. Can you go to tour school?
I don't know. Docent school?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
We know some docents. They're really good at their job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't know. So did you have fun picking apples today, Chad?
It's like a trigger word for my awful memories of college.
No.
It was fun. No, there's more to talk about. We had a lot of fun. We went picking apples today. Didn't know that was a thing. It's totally a thing. Look at these, staring at my hair. You like this hair? It's getting chopped tomorrow. It's so long. It's so long.
Yeah, apple. You didn't know apple picking was a thing?
I know people picked apples because I've eaten apples and, you know, like they didn't just, the ghost didn't just whoosh them over from the tree to be punny.
Jimmy, I go with your apple.
Oh, thanks, Jimmy. Spooky.
That's what I would do. Apple a day. And
then, I don't get this joke, but okay. Yeah.
I would like write it on the whiteboard or something.
Yeah, we need a ghost whiteboard. You, like, fog up a window so you can, you know. Maybe like, okay, first syllable rhymes with bapple.
Ghost charades. Anyway.
Ghost charades with props.
We went apple picking. It was super fun. We went to Stonehill Orchards in North Collins, New York. A little shout out to them. It was really nice. And even though they were busy, the place is big enough that you really didn't feel like it was crowded at all. And everybody, for the most part, all the adults were wearing masks, which I really appreciate. I was actually actively not trying to look because I didn't want to feel frustrated. So anybody that I did notice was wearing a mask. And then I was just like focused on us and our family. So
I want to say it was like 75%, but there were just, you know, like there'd be like a family and they're all wearing masks except for grandma and grandpa of their family who just can't be bothered.
I didn't notice that.
Guys, you're the most at risk. But anyway.
But our kids did great, and they kept their masks on the whole time, didn't complain about it one bit. Like, they're so regular about it now. And our kids are ages 5 and 7. And we picked all different kinds of apples, and they all fit into one bag. So we got half a bushel of apples.
It was fun. You know, it's like rows of apple trees, and you just go down the rows and pick apples off the trees.
Yeah, there is a ton of apples. Many different kinds.
I'd never gone. It was like a slice of Americana that, like the mystery spots. I never been apple picking.
Oh, well, welcome to apple picking, Chad. It was fun.
I guess it's something you do when you're in a family.
And now we will, next month we'll get pumpkins. Maybe we'll do a corn maze or something else outdoors. So outdoor activities feel attainable right now.
Yeah, as long as you can stay socially distanced, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was all right. It was like over and done. I was surprised. I was expecting more stuff. Like, I was expecting, like, a corn maze or the other things that pumpkin patches have to bring you in and do more, like, hey, ride the tractor for an extra $5, you know, and then you slowly tractor around a little bit, or like, hey, like the one place we went to on Long Island.
Yes.
That was like, you go for pumpkins, but then they got you, and then they're like, hey, look at this amazing playground, just $10, and, you know, they make all their money in like a month, so.
Yeah, but it was super fun. We had a great time.
Yeah.
And now we have a lot of apples. And
what are you going to make? Because we got the kids were picking baby apples.
Oh,
like,
tiny,
so
tiny,
tiny
little
apples.
Well, I definitely, with at least a couple of the itty bitty apples, one of them I want to carve into an apple head. And if you don't know what an apple head is, it's this way of carving an apple, like a face into an apple, and then letting the apple shrivel and dry out so that it becomes this old, gnarled face, and it looks really cool.
And it's like a traditional American doll thing.
I think so. Yeah, like an apple head. So, yeah, if you've never heard of it, Google it. I've never actually gotten to do one before, so this fall I'm going to carve an apple head. And then we'll probably, the oven, your parents' oven isn't working right now, so they're going to get a new oven. And then once the new oven is in place, I'm definitely going to make, like, apple crisp, maybe apple pie, fresh whipped cream. Last night, I made a really good dinner. I made matzo ball soup and potato latkes, and it was delicious.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And applesauce, fresh homemade applesauce from apples in your parents' backyard, because there's a wild apple tree way out in the field. And so the kids climbed up the apple tree because the apples were actually so high up, because these are trees that have not been grafted. It's a wild apple tree. The orchard trees have all been grafted to be dwarfed. But the wild tree is like, high. Yeah. And so the kids shimmied up the apple tree and they were like throwing apples down at me. I'd be like, I'm over here. And they'd throw one at me and I'd catch it. So that's
good job.
Fun. Yeah.
You know, there was a time where you could not catch, really. You've come a long way.
I'm a lot better. I'm really still not extremely confident about it, but I'm better than I was. So
there was a point in our relationship where I would throw something at her, like, oh, here you go. Like, you know, like something like toss it a couple feet. And I would get reprimanded by you because it would be like an attack. Like you'd be like,
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so you've come so far.
Trauma from gym class. Ongoing.
Yes. Dodgeball.
Well, I was never really great at gym class and then it just kept getting worse.
Yeah.
So if you don't level up with everybody else, you level down.
Yeah,
and
true. You're either the thrower or just a target when it comes to dodgeball. Mm-hmm.
Or you just forget your gym clothes every single class.
Well, girls could get out and of gym class.
Oh?
Yeah.
Well, maybe in your school.
In our school, you could just be like, I'm on my period today. Ta-da, whenever we, you know, and just sit out.
No,
and that would be fine.
No, you weren't allowed to do that.
Wow.
Mm-mm.
Well, we also had a pool.
And I, you know, I'm like half joking about the I forgot my gym clothes thing, but you had to change into gym clothes in order to participate in gym class. So if you forgot your gym clothes and couldn't change into anything, then you couldn't participate. And if you did that 3 times, I think you failed gym.
Yes.
So
we were the same. And that's why I will never wear white socks because part of the gym uniform was white socks.
But you had a uniform.
Yes.
Oh, we did not.
White t-shirt, some kind of shorts, and white socks. And I was like, I hate white socks. I'm wearing all black.
The whole thing with, oh my God, I could go into a whole trauma situation about gym and high school gym, which our high school is 7 through 12, which is also a situation in itself. But
so 7th graders were playing...
No, but you were sharing like it. No, but it was the same space. Like you weren't in the same class as the 12th graders, but just being in the same building in the same space and like you would see them in the same gym that you were just in. And there's something, I don't know about that. And also not having any older brothers or sisters to tell you like what to do in the locker room and what not to do in the locker room. And like, and this ongoing fear because our school was highly crowded. It was always a 7th through 12th school. But understand that a few years after I graduated, our 7th through 12th school became the junior high. So 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That's 6 grades then got reduced down to half that.
Wow.
Right? 3 grades. 3 grades in what was servicing a 6th grade building, you know, six different grades.
Hmm.
That's how overcrowded it was. You had 3 minutes in between periods when the bell rings to get to your class.
Right.
The gym was the furthest thing away. So you're like running to get to the gym, then changing into stuff that smells horrible because you don't ever want to forget your gym clothes.
Yeah,
so you keep them in your locker forever. And so they're like gross.
Yes.
They are so gross.
Same, total same.
You're throwing them on. You smell disgusting. You go into the gym class. It's traumatic. There are people there who are extremely good at these things. You are not one of them. And then they're either throwing things at you, asking you to catch things, asking you to run and run faster, or telling you that you're a horrible person because you're not helping them to win.
Yes.
Whatever thing we were trying to win. And so, or it's kickball and you have to like, and you don't feel comfortable actually kicking the ball or doing anything with any kind of force. So you always bunt.
Yes.
Everyone knows, oh, here she comes. And then they creep up. Like you're starting to get towards the ball to hit it and everybody starts to like creep up towards you to catch the thing that you're about to tap with your foot.
Yeah.
It's like impending doom. Anyway, so then gym's over. Oh, crap. So then you run back up the stairs to your locker room, change out of your stinky stuff back into your things. They've turned on the showers. No one uses them.
Yes.
Because there's no time. They're just on. It's just wasting water.
The group showers that you're required to shower in.
They would say, shower, ladies. And it's like, How? There's no time. You throw your clothes on. The bell is dinging as you're like putting your shirt on over your head. You're running with your stuff down the stairs all the way through the class. And you might get to your next class on time. And you're like, you know.
Because if you don't get there on time, you get
detention.
Yeah.
And you know what? I had perpetual detention for like years. Years, because if you were late to a class, then you get detention. And then I had so many after school activities because I was really determined to spend as much time away from my family as possible because I wanted independence. And so I couldn't sometimes serve detention because I was needed at these after school activities. So if you miss one detention, then you get two detentions. And then if you somehow miss two detentions in a row, you get in school suspension. And eventually that finally happened to me, caught up with me at my senior year. And then I said, I will not. And I had like a practical nervous breakdown in the school. So,
right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it all goes back to gym class.
A terrible, unfair system that we're all just thrown into.
So, yeah, so when you're throwing things at me,
yes,
this is where it all came from.
Yeah.
And I was like, ah! It's more like my 14-year-old self is saying, why are you oppressing me? That's really what's happening. Why are you horrible?
Right, so I'm just going to make a blanket. I'm going to make it a blanket apology because I was a gym class warrior. I was the person who really excelled at certain things, and I really wanted to win. And when people weren't participating in a way that we were, like, because I never won anything. Like, I played soccer so many years. We were never number one, never ever. But gym class was one place where I could actually excel because most people were terrible. Most regular people who did not play sports, which is most people, even though we were a sports school. They were terrible. So I was just like running people like down, run around people, like, yeah, like doing my best. I would like run laps. I was the only person who would actually run an entire lap around our track. And, and for many different reasons, I would get all shouty and like, you know, the worst in me came out. So I was definitely one of those people that, you know, shouted at you in gym class and threw the ball at you and crept up and told people, you know, during baseball, like, easy out and all the other horrible things that people would say.
Oh, I was told by your people.
My people.
Where to stand for a volleyball so that I wouldn't have to participate.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but that was fine. I would rather that than be asked, like, why, like, yelled at, why are you like this?
Yeah. No, so. I mean, I was definitely one of those guys where, like, everybody has their spots in volleyball, and I would, you know, encroach on other people's positions because they would do this when the ball came. So you're like, okay, if you're going to do that, I'm just going to encroach a little bit to, you know, hit the ball back because I enjoyed it, because I enjoyed playing the game.
It's a level of confidence I have never attained when it comes to those things.
But I was on JV and varsity, you know, soccer. And on in those types of situations, being like, you know, being like a toxic mess on wheels was encouraged, where it was like, if you can't take the ball, take the body, was what we were told, you know. And when you bring that to gym class where they're not ready, it feels like, whoa, what's happening? Who is this crazy person? And I would feel that when I would play sports that I was terrible at, like basketball. I'd always find a reason to sit on the bench in basketball because I wasn't good at it and I hated it and I was terrible. But the people who were really into basketball, you know, like I could see, and football too, terrible football. One person grabbed me by the neck and I was like running with the football, and this person, I could feel them coming and grab me by the neck. And before they could throw me down to the ground, I'm just like, I'm out, please. Ah, don't kill me. You know? So, like, you know, the shoe was on the other foot for certain sports. But if I was good at something in gym class, you know, like, look out, because here comes teenage aggression.
Yep. Anyway, we're all navigating things, but it's just interesting to think back on all that. And yes, so that's the reason why I wasn't good at catching things. But I've built some confidence since then. And the boys are throwing apples to me. Full circle. There we are.
I will tell you, mm-hmm. I'm very good at hitting people in the head. Very good.
Okay. There's certain How things is that, that helpful you... no, for no, no, this no, conversation?
No, no, no. I mean, throwing something and hitting somebody in the head.
Okay, so when throwing the zombie apocalypse comes, that's helpful. But
this is, and I'm good at, because of everything that I experienced in sports, I'm good at hurting people, I learned. I'm good at hitting somebody in the head. I'm good at hurting somebody in a way that it doesn't look like I did anything.
These are not good things, though.
Not at all, and that's why I am not encouraging our kids at all, to do competitive sports, especially physical sports, because what I was taught was to succeed in those ways, in those really physical ways, and that has not helped me as an adult at all. All those skills that we had from like playing JV ball and varsity ball, you know, did not benefit me at all as an adult at all. Like instead, where you're just left feeling is just like, well, I really could have spent my time doing something else and been, you know, like actual life skills. Like if we had spent gym class, like learning how to pay our taxes, that would have been awesome. If we had just like mandatory art class instead of like mandatory gym where it's like the haves versus the have nots, you know, I feel like, wow, that would have been so much nicer. You know, like why can't we teach classes about like, being kind or planting trees or something constructive, because at the end it's just like when I played soccer in college, like all those old terrible habits because we had an awful coach for 4 years would come back, and I would like catch myself like, I don't want to hurt my friend, don't do that, or like why did I just like lead with my shoulder into this, which I know is like legal, but that's my friend. You know, like I just ate lunch with them. So I have a lot of regret from being taught these things that I feel like are not applicable as like adult life skills. And people and adults that show those things still with them, you know, that are like aggressive or like punch their friends like, how's it going? You know, like punching or like throwing or pranking and stuff like that. I just feel like, wow, that toxic behavior should not survive anymore, and we should definitely not be teaching our kids that.
I also think that it's just how it's reflective of the age of how boys were raised too back then, and I mean boys are still raised in some similar ways and by people today, but there's I think also a more, especially in the community that we live in and the friends that we have, you know, we're trying to raise more sensitive boys, you know, and tougher girls. Like we're trying to kind of like balance it out a little bit. In fact, I see a lot of stuff, a lot of really cool shirts for girls that are like, you know, proclaiming how awesome they are and how tough they are. But I don't see like really cool shirts for boys that are like, you know, I'm a boy and I think rainbows are cool. Like I don't see that shirt, and I don't know when I'm gonna see that shirt. And you know, as a mom of two boys who love things like that, I mean they don't necessarily want words on their shirts, but they would like to have more cool, fun, glittery things that don't necessarily have ruffles, right? Like,
and I feel that way too.
Yeah,
I'm like every time I go to any men's department in any clothing store. Anywhere, city, country, it's just the same like gender-coded color nonsense where guys' clothes are boring and dark colors, and girls get all of, like the fun, colorful stuff with like amazing, empowering stuff written on it, and it's so hard to find.
You have to work harder to find the things that you want. Yeah. So, I mean, we always buy our stuff secondhand. Mm-hmm. And I use this really great app called Kitty Zen, which is like thrifting for your kids' clothes.
How do you spell that?
KIDIZEN. Mm-hmm. And I really, really like that app. And actually, we did a show for them early on in the pandemic because I love them so much that I wrote to them and said, I've been a customer of yours for a long time, and you were asking how you guys could help well, we'd love to do a show for you, and you could pay us. And then that worked out. So that was really nice. And I've continued to use that app. The filters are great. So if you're looking, I know a lot of people use like a ThredUp or a Poshmark, but I really like Kitty Zen because the filters are so good and you can save them and you can even find stuff yourself too. So, and I cool. show the kids like things that I think that they'll like that are in their size. And then I let them pick a couple of those things, you know, and so it's like a wide array. You know, I go from like sparkle pants to regular pants to, you know, pants with a rainbow on the side to boring regular pants. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, then they can decide what they want. Yeah. So, and it was a mix. Leaf wanted sparkle pants and boring pants.
You know, our mutual friend David Bizarro was lamenting this past week why aren't skirts a thing for men? It's like, why? Well, the kilts are the only thing that's like, let's say, socially acceptable in air quotes. And I was telling him like, hey, it's the same thing all the way down to boys, man. You know, like there ain't no dresses for girls that are like utility kilts.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no like skirts for men that aren't just, you know, straight up, you know, from the ladies or just like, man. This men's skirt needs to be as manly as possible to compensate for the fact that it's a man wearing a skirt has to have like dagger holsters and like pockets on it and
it's
has
true.
To come from a tradition of manly men from Scotland.
It's
and,
true.
You know.
Like our 5-year-old still enjoys wearing like sparkles and dresses and things. And
yeah. We had this beautiful day where we went to the store to get, I forget what.
Something.
Yeah, and he was like, and he saw a dress, and he was like, oh, can we get this? And I was like, yes. And I just took him through the girls' section, and he was like, wow, what about this? Wow, can I get this? And I was like, yes, 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 everything, just throw it all into the cart. I mean, it's cheap, because it's kids' clothes.
Yeah.
But it was also just like, all the pretty girl colors that girls get to wear with like, you know, nice, encouraging messages on them that you would never get if you're shopping for boys. You know, boys, if there's stuff on a boy's shirt, it's like some kind of dangerous animal or sports, like contact sports, or just boring plain colors. There's no handsome prince gear, you know. Excuse me. There's no like, yes, you know, we are indoctrinating, or at least in our American culture, like our boys into believing through their clothing who they can be.
Yeah, well, they can be whoever they want. And what's nice is living in New York City, you know, you can see adults who also wear whatever they want.
Yeah.
A lot more often. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their Aunt Emmy, who's like my sister, she is like a cartoon character. She's just always got different colored hair, different huge earrings, like shiny something somewhere, like, you know, whether it's a pants, a vest, like something's glittery. And, you know, she's all about fashion stuff. I'm just lazy, but I like all that stuff. I can't get it together to devote time or energy in my day to, gray hoodie.
Yeah, but this gray hoodie, I'm just going to let this fly out a little bit more. There we go.
We got a bright
color happening.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
That's right. What else did you want to talk about
for
this week?
Well, I wanted to talk about streaming school.
Okay.
Because
it's like a therapy session for us every week.
That's right.
Aren't you glad you're listening?
That's right. Here, I'm just going to list that on the list of things from a therapy session. I'm writing some notes. So let's see.
Oh, no.
Things
to talk to Z about later.
Things
to talk about on the drive home.
Gender nonsense. You know, no, so let's talk about streaming school. And if you're watching this live, I did say streaming school woes because it's a transition. Transitions are hard. We decided early on in March when schools or school activities were streaming online, our kids kind of rejected it, not to push hard into it, and instead just teach them stuff, you know, in real life. And just work with them on stuff. And you and Grandma have been awesome this entire summer. about just like working and continuing their education. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And now we've finally transitioned to streaming school. And now it's like, okay, you know, now we're finally experiencing the ups and the downs and their feelings about it and our feelings about it. And I want to, you know, I want to talk about it because it's helpful if people can hear, mm-hmm. you know, what's happening in our version of it.
Well, because last week we talked about how we weren't getting along about it.
Yes.
And that you were feeling like I was too involved. Mm-hmm. And that so this week you were going to take the reins and I was going to, as much as possible, step away and kind of observe and try to and we would try to find a happy medium.
Yeah.
So how'd it go?
I think it went mostly okay. You know, I've tried to be as hands-off as possible, let the teacher do her thing. I did not listen in, and the teacher figured out a way to tell if there was a message for me. She would tell the kids, hey, tell your dad this, and that worked. You know, that worked in that sense. There was one day where I decided to say no to everything because Finn figured out finally how to mess with the virtual backgrounds. Leaf figured out how to text people things through the messaging because we're using Zoom. And then Finn was like, me too. And they both just started writing gobbledygook, like just like a bunch of random numbers and letters. And I said no to those things, which is a trap. Saying no to your kids is a trap sometimes instead of just letting them be. Let them get them out of their system and let the teacher say yes or no or whatever. I decided I was going to be the authority and say, you know, like, don't do that. Don't do that. I told you not to do that. Why are you still doing that? I get really worked up, you know, about it. I apologize to them at the end of the day or the next day.
Next day.
Because I was like, you know, sorry, I should not have done that. And we all had some feelings, especially Finn, because I kept, when you hear just like, no, no, no from somebody, it makes you feel bad, you know? So that happened, and I acknowledge it was like, it was really hard that day, you know, but other days were easier, you know, and what I wanted, which was the teacher to directly tell them what to do, and then me only come in when needed, as less as I possibly could, happened, you know. But at the end of the week, you came in for that final day.
I did Friday.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because Thursday was just like, was that day for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I feel like, you know, for as hard as it has been for us,
mm-hmm.
right, adjusting to the transition, I feel like they've been doing the work. They have not outright rejected streaming school as like a medium of learning.
Mm-hmm.
It's only for... so far the mornings, like a 2-hour session, and we're talking about, or we're going to talk about more today, about them doing more, because now we can finally do afternoon classes because finally our parents have internet at their house.
Yes, that's been a big transition, having internet at the parents' house. I'm happy to continue working with them in the mornings because I like doing that. I do listen in on what the teacher's saying. We have to have the kids having headphones because we have two kids, and if they're in any space where they could hear each other's computer, there's a horrible feedback echo issue that happens.
Right.
So we have splitters coming off of both of the iPads for the headphones so that a second pair of headphones could then get plugged in and you can listen in on what's happening. But I really tried to not talk very much. I was just listening in to see what are they supposed to be doing, what is the lesson, and then also every once in a while she teaches something that's actually not the way that we teach it in the United States.
Oh right, because she's
from Ireland.
Irish.
Yes, and so she taught in Ireland for a long, long time, and so like a clear example, and I have to text her about this sometime this weekend, is that she was teaching about rounding, which is great. We haven't talked about rounding yet with Leaf, so Leaf is learning. Yeah, rounding numbers, rounding from the ones place, the tens place, the hundreds place, and this all makes sense, and I like the way that she was teaching all of it. But then she said that if you're looking at the number five, you get to decide to round up or down. And that's actually not how we teach rounding here in the States. And I double checked with my mother-in-law, who has been a teacher for most of her life and just retired a couple of years ago. And she said, yeah, five, always round up. So I just have to text her and tell her that. And then there's other things like the way that we've been teaching Finn how to say some certain sight words, like when the letter A is all by itself, we haven't been reading it as A, like you never book a match. It's a. Like it's that's how we say
book a match.
We don't say book a match. Yeah, book a match. Maybe
that's an American thing.
It also might be regional too, but it's how we've been teaching how to say it. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to confuse him. And then also, it's regional for the Northeast overall to say and so yeah, and just the same with the. We don't say the, we say the. So certain things. So every once in a while I hear something, and then earlier on last week I was saying it in the class. I'm not saying it in the class anymore.
Good.
I'm hearing it. I'm making a mental note of it, and then I'm writing to her after and saying, "Hey, just so you know, da da da."
I think that's positive.
Yes. I'm holding back more. Mm-hmm. I'm just making sure that the kids are staying on task and doing the work. Or if they're being rude, I'm giving them a choice to participate or to just sit and not do anything. But we're building up a stamina and also a level of expectation of what each of these days with our teachers will feel like and will be like. And we're trying to, I think, by next month, have a routine. Now the schooling, instead of being in our studio space, is going to be back at the house, which will also be a positive.
For everyone.
Yes, for everyone.
But it just had to happen while we figured that out.
Yep. Yep. But I think what'll be nice is that we'll I have to find a space somewhere in the next day or two of like where all the school stuff lives in the house, how it's going to be organized, so that they can get it out. They can be more autonomous themselves of getting things out, what they need. But then also like getting their folder for the day, finding the work that we've printed out for them. You know, I want them to be able to get to that place of being on their own more, but also I'm more of the place of like one thing at a time.
Yeah.
So we're getting there, you guys. Just so you know, if you were worried, how's it going? It's going, you know, and we're figuring it out, and we're working together. There's an old kids television show song that just
how's it go? You gotta sing it now.
Working together makes everything better, and together we get the job done.
What is it from?
Seymour's Playhouse.
Okay.
I added in the little end part.
When you said old, I was like, oh, like High Feather or something from our childhood.
No. Oh, man. No. And in fact, I can't talk about the new podcast is going to be great, you guys. The Sesame Street podcast. I can't even talk. Like, it's going to be so
good. Don't talk about
it. That's all I want to say. It's so exciting. You all have to listen to it October 15th.
Yes.
We have to, like, do something special that day because it's just so exciting.
Yeah, what are we going to do?
I don't know, but we're going to do something.
We're going to get some eggplant parm, maybe, or something like your favorite meal.
Yes.
And we're going to listen to you.
Yes.
Listen to 15-minute podcasts. Or how long is each episode?
I think like they're 10? Releasing one every Tuesday and Thursday.
Oh.
So it's going to be like a gradual rollout. Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
So you guys all have to listen and share it and stuff. Okay. Anything else we want to talk about this week?
Yeah, I want to talk about, I'm going to get real.
Okay. Like we were, before. Yeah, I was like,
I'm still angry about my college professor. No. I want to talk about puppeteers adapting to this new streaming world and then getting left behind by this new streaming world. Because from our perspective, because this week I had to write a very hard email to our performing partners saying basically goodbye. Because our business...
Our performing partners are independent contractors who perform the shows for us.
Yes. So for a while now, when we were doing years where we would do like 400 shows a year, we would contract out these amazing women, puppeteers, who would go and perform our shows for us around the city. And when we started doing streaming stuff, we were like, hey, we'll support you. Come on, we'll pay you something. Let's do these DIY workshops. We did 100. It was amazing. And then by the time we hit 100, everyone had kind of figured out like other work or unemployment or something, to where we, as one of their employers, didn't feel like the financial burden of keeping them afloat was on us, or at least that's how I felt personally, because I wanted to help in the beginning. And a lot of other puppet companies were kind of the same. We're kind of like, okay, great, we got to scramble. Let's figure out a streaming plan. Let's get all on streaming right now. Now that's because we work in a like a family theater, like kids and family audiences. Now that's all of the kids in the U.S. are back in school in a physical way or streaming, like our target audience is gone, and all of our beautiful, amazing views that we kept up throughout the summer have like gone down to like let's say like a very low number. And we're all kind of figuring out again, pivoting again, what do we do now? But now it feels less clear. Before it was like, okay, let's just bring our stuff online and bring it to the people because they need something. You know, families need something. Now there's been six months for all these giant corporations with all this money to develop stuff to go throughout the school year. Yeah. And all these contracts have gone to big companies with celebrities who can offer their stuff for free. So all the puppet companies out there that are like us have to compete with that once again. So I feel like our moment in the sun was all those giant companies back in the spring who couldn't pivot as fast as the small guys. You know, we were there on the ground floor helping people out and streaming stuff for parents who needed the time, for kids, you know, like that's completing our mission statements, you know, is like, you know, helping kids through our shows and performing and the art of puppetry and all that. Now it feels like we're looking at like, well, maybe they don't need us right now. What do we do? Because we got 33 weeks now until summer vacation.
Make a new show.
Yeah.
That's the things that we can be doing if we're not getting hired, is we start taking that time to make new work.
We've been working on stuff this whole time.
Yeah. So, but, you know, even more. Yeah. I mean, that's what I think of, you know, and organizing what we have and, you know, re-showcasing what we've done. And
But our brethren out there who've been doing socially distanced shows, like out in Phoenix doing a drive-in puppet show, which is super cool, that they just recently built a new show for, like Big Dinosaurs, or if you were performing in driveways. That's once the fall, like now fall's here officially, once the winter hits, even that is not going to be a thing. So we're all kind of scrambling again to figure out, what do we do? How do we survive? A lot of our, part of my email saying goodbye, at least for now, to our performing partners was like, we got emailed from the people who would book us saying, I lost my job, which is disheartening. It's like residencies that you would think, wow, this just keeps going. Maybe this is going to be like a lifetime residency. The place is closed, or the person lost their job.
That department doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so even when this is over and life gets to go back to some kind of normal, you know, the companies are going to be hurting for a long time to try to regain their footing, just like us. And, you know, the kind of thing that we do, it's a lovely benefit. Like, it's like a sweet little thing that they get to, you know, add on to the core mission, usually, of what it is that they do. Mm-hmm. And so that's not going to be at the forefront of people's, you know, minds. And so those departments aren't going to get, you know, brought back. Or if they are, it's going to be very limited budgets. And with new people, new staff, probably, who will have less experience and will get paid less. And they won't know about us. And they probably won't even think puppets, because that's always a big part of the equation too, is how do we get people to realize what they want is puppets? Because then once they realize what they want is puppets, sometimes they find us or they find some of our friends. But the challenge is always, you want entertainment? Awesome. Puppetry. How do we get them to think puppet show? You know, mm-hmm. That's always been the number one challenge. And so it's just, you know, you were saying to me the other day in the car yesterday that it's going to be a lot like starting all over again. And that, you know, yeah. I hadn't really come to terms with that until you said it like that. And then that hit me really hard when you said it like that, because then it became much more real that, yeah, we worked really, really hard for 10 years mm-hmm. to build all the contacts and everything that we had. And we will work hard again to rebuild all that stuff. But it is yeah. it takes the wind out of your sails a bit. And I don't know, that momentum that we had. And it won't take as long to build back up, hopefully. Right. It won't be another 10 years to get back to where we were. But still, it
might be a solid three to five.
It's going to be it will be another struggle. And I know that we will do it, but it will be a slow build. Mm-hmm. back. But I think that if we're accepting and understanding of that, it will make it easier. And then we can take that extra time that we normally would have been using performing to like make ourselves better.
Yeah.
Better parents, better people, better artists in Yay. Some capacity.
That's so inspiring. Wow.
Well, I have to be. You have to. You have to. Yeah. Listen to some Wayne Dyer, people.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
No, I think the best thing that ever happened to us was starting a puppet company in the middle of a depression.
Because recession.
I mean.
Oh, is the jury out on that one? I thought it was a recession.
To some of us in the arts community, it was a depression. It was depressing times.
Yeah.
And when we came in, every puppet company at this national festival in 2007 was like,
hurting.
No one has money. Everyone is in a depression. Arts got left behind again. What do we do? And when we went around videotaping workshops, that was the questions on everyone's mind. What's your business plan like? Who do you contact? How do you break out of your region? Are you touring? Are you not touring? Because everyone was hurting for money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I feel like puppetry is one of those forms that's like it's always going to be on the brink, but it's always going to be around like no matter
yeah.
what.
And we'll go back to doing a lot more private shows for a while probably. Yeah. And
this is not me complaining.
Yeah.
You know, this is not me whining, saying like, because we had the knowledge going in that, okay, if you get into the school system, guess what? Suddenly the money could just drop out and it can't be your only source of income. So we always diversified. No matter how many shows we did per year, we were always like, always get more, always look for more. You got to stay hungry. You got to like, you know, look into different markets. Where can you market yourself with your current stuff that could be slightly different? So we're going to be continuing to pound the pavements, but it means because we don't have work and we won't have work for team members, it means it's just me and you, sweetie, like old times.
Like old times.
Like that's the real 10 years ago is like yeah. our goal 10 years ago was 4 shows a month. That was the goal. We had to work really hard
for
then
that
number.
We were breaking even.
Yes.
We were breaking even. And then and then it became, after a couple years, make sure we're doing 8 shows a month. That was the minimum number. And yes. that has continued to be the minimum number. If we're not doing 8 shows a month, something's wrong.
Yeah. So when we build back mm-hmm. up, like I don't have a minimum for streaming. You know, mm-hmm. we still stream. We still do private streams, even though like our public offerings are now limited because I feel like
we need to kind of.
We did it. So now like everyone's kind of moving past.
Well, I think we're all in a bit of a holding pattern too, because yeah. it's hard to know what is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Everything is so tenuous
yes.
with the election coming soon. I mean, we're not going to talk politics really today, but you know, I think everyone's feeling very tense, and this great uncertainty about what the future holds for all of these things that really do affect our daily lives. And the fact that this thing that no one really has any control over affected everyone on the planet
right.
in some capacity. That's really mind-blowing. And And this has been a giant, huge reset button for a lot of people and a lot of businesses. It's been an ending and a new beginning for a lot of things. And it's also been very tragic for so many people.
Yeah.
There's a great sense of loss, both in life and like lives lost, but then also a life previously lived that was suddenly cut short through nothing that you were in control of. And I think that if we can all come out of this with a sense of acceptance, you know, that nothing is forever and that things change and that we need to be flexible and just try to find the joy in it. You know, I've been having a lot of really wonderful moments. Like last night when I was cleaning the playhouse, I reorganized the entire kids' play area last night. I don't know what got into me. It had happened.
You zoned out.
I did.
And you needed to organize.
I did. And I was listening to Michelle Obama's book. She's reading to me. It's like we're friends now. I love it. Michelle, we will hang out whenever you want. So I was thinking to myself while listening to her talking about her life experiences and her growing up and her family and her Chicago and how Chicago is such an important part of her heart and her life, her soul, and how this experience, if it hadn't been for this pandemic, I never would have gotten this chance to full on live with another family, ever, I don't think. And it's been wonderful. It has been really wonderful. Because it's given me a whole chance to see what a family life, what family life can be like again, right? I mean, no one has yelled at each other. We've been here since June 1st. There has been zero arguments where somebody has raised their voice and then had to leave the room. There has been zero times where somebody has left the house, slammed the door, and driven away in a huff, and you don't know when they're going to come back. Like, none of these things have happened, you know? These are just, like, two examples of things that, like, I expect, you know, to happen in families.
That's when you grew, what you grew up with.
Sure. I just expect that to happen because that's what I know of as day-to-day family life, not special holiday time family life.
Oh, yes.
And it's, you know what? It's been awesome. And I think that it's been a real gift for me because I'm really resetting a lot of things that I didn't know I needed to reset. And I think it's been awesome for the kids to be able to see that here are all these adults getting along, you know,
Working as a team.
Yeah,
like
it's really cool.
Dinner, dishes, yard work, like everybody works on it together. Nobody says, you know, you got to do this. We just do it because it needs to get done.
Yeah,
it's kind of professional in a way. Like we're all like really respecting each other.
There's a lot of respect.
Yeah,
there's a lot of respect happening, and kindness and thoughtfulness, and it's really cool. And I don't know. I've been really thinking about that a lot. You know, it goes beyond me saying I'm so thankful for this. It's something that could never have happened if it hadn't been for this, you know, tragic moment in history. But also, I think I will think back on this time and think that was a really special time. And I'm really glad that it happened.
I mean, it's been so special so far. I mean, we've been here for, on October 1st, it'll be 4 months. Mm-hmm. And we've done things just because we were just hanging out that needed to get done, or it's really cool that we were around to get it done, like things around the house, things outside, you know, like building forts. And I'm looking forward to snow. Like I've been building things for the snow. I've been thinking about, okay, how do we reinforce this fort that our littlest one wanted to make for the snow, you know, and things like that. And yeah, in terms of, you know, like your old life ends and you can mourn it. And I have been, especially the business, because I work so hard all the time on it. even up till school started, I refused to let it go. I refused to let all the work that we had done for 10 years just stop. So I just kept working, you know, but now there's literally no work, or very little, because we're not as needed, or our target audience is somewhere else, and that's fine. But now I feel like I've been mourning the last couple weeks that there's literally nothing I can do. And all the work that we've been doing, planting seeds for the future, and building this new show, good idea by good idea, is that's what I'm working on now. But yeah, I think we're all looking, we all see it as a really positive time. And parents, if you're watching, because you have the internet now, you can watch this now live.
That's true.
I hope you hope that it was positive too. You know, that we didn't impose too much.
Mm-hmm.
That we were helpful and that we all got closer, because my parents because they're super busy. You know, they came out a couple times to our apartment, maybe once every couple years. Now they're seeing us every day. Probably it's gonna be a year before we leave. It's not that I'm putting it out there that's what I want, but when the Met says, okay, we're not coming back until fall of 2021, and Dr. Fauci and others are saying even if there's a vaccine tomorrow, it's gonna be 6 months before everybody gets inoculated, and there will always be people who will refuse because this is America, and we that's baked into the culture for some reason.
But then it becomes something weird like measles, you know, then it's yes. Then it becomes, there's been a measles outbreak, you know.
But I will always wear my mask on the subway. Every single day I ride the subway. That is not
going forward.
That is not I can't imagine riding the subway or being in a confined space with people and not wearing a mask now because I don't want to get sick with anything. I hate getting sick. Hate it.
Yeah.
Hate it. Who likes getting sick? I mean, you do get to spend all day in bed, resting, watching movies, and drinking chicken soup or whatever your happy place is. But I hate having something wrong happening.
Yep. Yep. Well, I mean, I don't know. I think I'll be really interested to see how you feel after we go back for one day in October. We're going to go back October 28th to the 29th and vote, and the kids are going to get their updated medical stuff, vaccines, and because they missed all their appointments because everything got crazy at that time, and get their teeth cleaned. And I'm going to get a tiny cavity filled. Think good thoughts for me.
You're going to do great.
But thanks. But, you know, I will say that being back for that one day in September was very therapeutic for me, because when we last left the city, it was still really bad, and it was just starting to get better. The weather was just starting to turn, but playgrounds were all still closed. A lot of things were still closed, and I got to see the city not back to normal, but not as bad as it was, and that really helped my mindset. Think about and visualize us being back, because I was having a very, very hard time visualizing it while being here. And it was a lot easier when I was there and I actually saw with my own eyes, our city and our city being okay.
Yeah. So
yeah,
I wanted to say, I want to say thank you. A big old thank you, public thank you to our performing partners, everyone who has helped us along the way, all of our allies and residency partners who are still there or who are no longer in those positions. Thank you. Our super supporters, that's right. Thank you for everyone who supported us over the spring and summer.
Yeah.
Although naturally, as we assumed, the number of people supporting us now that the work is no longer maybe as needed, you know, those are dropping out too.
But we're so thankful. We're so thankful for everything and the well wishes and the shares and mm-hmm. the kindness and
Thanks, thanks to everyone in chat.
Yeah.
Thanks, Vanessa Ambrose. We heart you too, man.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. And to Uncle Tom, Bills win. Yay, Bills. Go Bills.
Go Bills.
And Sam, who has been an amazing part of my Sesame journey. Mm-hmm. Sam's energy is just, it just is amazing. And
is she the writer?
Yes.
Director.
Yeah, she's the writer. She's an amazing writer. Like, she does, she's just been an amazing cheerleader too, and just like a light. So if you're still watching this, Sam, there are so many amazing moments that have continued to happen in the midst of this great time. And I've never lived through something like really intense like this before. It feels like a dark time in our history, but I can see how I can see how, you know, when people live through something that's really traumatic, that there are always still these little bright spots that you, because the human spirit, you know, you have to in order to get by. And, you know, I remember early on hearing an interview with somebody who had made it through, I think they were a prisoner of war in one of the wars or something. Mm-hmm. And the way that they were able to make it through a very, very long period of that was don't tell yourself it's going to be over by a certain date.
Right.
Because when you get to that date and then it's not over, your hope level just goes down. So you just have to say, today is going to be this day and then tomorrow will be what it'll be. Mm-hmm. And you just have to keep going like that. And eventually at some point, things are going to change. There will be a new chapter and a new page. And, you know, we always want to take a moment to say that if you're having a really, really hard time, you don't know if you're going to be able to make it, you're not sure that you want to get out of bed, like, take a moment, connect with someone, call somebody, you know, take that extra second. You matter, and we care about you. And this is a struggle, and it's a marathon. It's not a race. And if you're not feeling like you're okay, talk to somebody who's going to help you to find how you can be okay for today and be okay for tomorrow too, because we need you around for tomorrow.
Yeah. Get on a public forum and rant about your old college professor, because let me tell you, it feels great to get that out of there. No, I texted a bunch of people today. Texted a bunch of people because I was feeling sad that my Uncle Sam died.
Yeah.
My Uncle Sam apparently had a massive heart attack last night and probably died in his sleep. So we're never seeing him again. And yeah, it's just like, you know, 200,000 families, you know, in this country, probably 210 by the end of the week, you know, are experiencing like this crazy loss, and losing somebody that's like, that you know, is really hard. And I don't think he died due to complications from COVID. He was always a big guy. So who knows? We're not sure yet. But like, yeah, I was feeling all kinds of sad. And that's when, so if you're out there, you get a random text from me. It's usually because I'm feeling like I need somebody to talk to me.
Yeah.
And most of the time I can get by without.
So take care of yourselves. We'll be here next week at the same time. All right. And if you're having a hard time taking care of yourself, find somebody who can help. Okay? We love you. We love you very much.
It's true. You matter. Mm-hmm. We're going to make it through this thing.
We are.
You know, no matter what, we got this. You got this. You know, it's tough for everybody, but you can do it. Okay, we believe in you.
That's mm-hmm. true.
Thank you, chat.
All right.
So we are, once again, the Puppet Parent Podcast. Down with this episode 25. Yeah, 25.
25. Woo! Quarter of a century old.
That's right. At some points, we'll hit episode 100. What do you think we should do when that happens?
I have a party. I don't know. Something.
I've been a part of a podcast that we hit multiple hundreds.
I'm not sure.
And just like being married to somebody, you have to do something, or it just feels like, you know, like you should have.
Okay. Well, let's think about it when we hit 50 then.
Okay. Okay. So when we hit 50, let's do something.
We'll start thinking about it.
Yeah.
All right.
So if you're out there and you have a good idea, hit us up at puppetparentpodcast.com. There is a form on the bottom of the page that only web spiders and robots have sent us a message on so far.
Oh.
So maybe like a real human being could, like, I don't know, say we're doing all right or something. I don't know. Anyway.
Thank you so much, everyone.
And bye.
Bye.